The DivaCast, 30 July 2007. Everybody, this is Suzanne, and we are the Divas of the DivaCast. We are five fabulous 40-something friends, and we get together and just yak it up. So grab a beverage and just join us. And again, this is Suzanne.
Hey, I'm Sharon.
I'm Amy.
I'm Carrie, and we believe inside every woman is a diva. Hey, everybody. Today, we're talking with Marilyn Haas. We finished up our interview with her husband, Roland Haas, who wrote the book
Enter the Past Tense, My Life as a CIA Assassin.
We are just really thrilled to get Marilyn's side of the story as a wife of an assassin on one side, and also the wife of a man who suffered from depression and alcoholism. Marilyn is the publisher and editor of a local magazine here where we live called Arts and Expressions Magazine, and the mother of two. Marilyn, thank you so much for agreeing to speak with us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Can you just maybe start out with talking about how you and Roland met?
Yes. Well, we were both married to other people.
Marilyn.
I was an employee of his. He owned a health club, and I taught aerobics for him. I watched him for about 4 months and saw that maybe his marriage wasn't going so well, and my marriage wasn't going so well. Neither of us had children. Sort of make a long story short, I invited him over to my house to show him my artwork.
Ah, the old, let me show you my artwork.
You go, girl.
And it worked. So we have been together ever since.
Oh, that must have been some artwork, Marilyn.
Well, we have been together ever since.
That's great. Wow.
So, but also with reading the book, you would see that the Hell's Angels was a part of that situation.
Right.
From that moment, you know, we did not stay long in our apartment. We ended up hiding out at a friend's house in her basement. Sold everything, basically. Went to Germany with two suitcases and about, I don't know, $400 to our name.
That is just wild.
Wow. So, and people would say when I tell them a story, someday you guys need to write a book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, well, I mean, I did not know that he worked for the CIA at all until a few years ago, and that's right before he fell down our steps. So life was very interesting with Roland. you know, and we ended up having our daughter. And, of course, I didn't find out till later that when she was still an infant, when I thought he was teaching classes for the University of Maryland, he was going under tunnels from mm-hmm. West Germany to East Germany and making it back and making it home.
That is just
amazing.
Gosh, I mean, you would be there with your little infant.
Yes.
And he'd come in and he'd say, How was
your day, dear?
Class.
How'd your class go? And truthfully, he always was where he said he was going to be. I mean, if he was going to be home at a certain time, he'd be home at a certain time. He never went out with the guys, never partied with the guys, ever. He was always very quiet. I was more of the social director of the family. You know, so almost uncomfortably quiet, too. If we'd go to a social gathering, you know, I think people would feel like he was being standoffish because he just wouldn't give a lot of information. But he was always a listener, never a talker. And, you know, that's just the way it was. You know, we lived in Germany for about 14 years, and that's where both of our kids were born. And I do remember the time when he brought some defectors to our home. And I really thought, see, he was working after he was an instructor for the University of Maryland. Then he got a regular government job with the federal government. And he was working in the area of security, any terrorism, and things of that nature. So if anything ever, you know, came up of that nature, I never questioned it because I wasn't allowed to ask any questions about what he did. I mean, his office was down in like a cellar type of a thing where there was an iron gate, and I just knew that he wasn't going to tell me anything about his day at work, and I wouldn't assume that he would tell me because he wouldn't be allowed to tell me. And the same with him, with us moving here. I mean, he is the Deputy Chief of Staff of Intelligence for the Army Reserve Command, and anything, if you say, oh, we're going on an inspection, or we're going here, we're going there, why should I question it? I mean, after speaking with him, you can tell he's very intelligent. I trusted everything that he ever said to me, you know, including, you know, he would handle all the bills and, you know, all the stuff. And if there was a big financial decision to be made, obviously, you know, whatever he thought, I thought would be the best decision, because I thought he was smarter than I was, obviously. I just felt that he was more worldly and maybe knew more than I did about certain things. And so I never questioned anything ever.
Good for you,
and
man.
So when these people came to our home, these defectors, you know, they were two scared couples, and, you know, I just didn't question. I just sort of thought that was part of Roland's regular job.
Well, Marilyn, did he ever return home with any cuts and bruises or something that was
never.
Kind of unexplainable?
No.
Or how did you find out that he was doing this for a living? Did he just come
that's
to tell you?
That's really the end of the story. Because a few years ago, well, let me just back up. Like, 9/11 actually had a lot to do with things. We were undergoing some financial difficulty. Having a high security clearance, even for his regular, now I know that was a cover job, but still, when you have a high security clearance, you don't ever want to say to anyone you've got a financial problem or you've got a depression problem,
right.
Because all of these were reasons possibly for him to get that pulled. And if he ever got it pulled, he would lose his job. I couldn't let anybody else on the outside know we were having a financial difficulty, or, you know, and later on he was having such depression, but I wasn't allowed to say anything to anyone. And this has nothing to do with the CIA. I mean, I had no idea about the CIA. But, you know, when 9/11 occurred, and during that time, for whatever reason, we were undergoing some financial difficulty. Well, and also, I was a graphic designer for like 20 years, and people stopped hiring me because everybody was holding on to their dollars.
Right.
You know, nobody was spending the extra money for anything for their business, you know. So I came up with the idea. I've been, and my son, involved in the arts and theater and everything. So that's how I came up with the idea of the magazine. I'm like, I've got to come up with something that I know that can be repetitive, that it'll, you know, happen every month, and I know I'll be able to bring in an income. And that was really almost, we were so down and out, like monetarily, I had asked my aunt, I'm like, can you help us with money? And she couldn't really help us. And it was just really like, what are we going to do? Well, it seemed like Roland was getting worse and worse and worse with the depression. It got to the point where there'd be days where he wouldn't get out of bed and he'd cry and he'd be feeling really sick. And also I thought the illness had a lot to do with his diabetes. He is full-blown diabetic, insulin dependent. You know, we know that if, you know, someone is high in sugar or low in sugar, they can actually act like they've been drinking.
Yeah.
And if I would ever smell like a certain kind of like alcohol smell, I would think, well, those are the ketones, because there is a smell if they blood sugar gets to a certain point, you give off like a ketone kind of smell. And so everything that happened, I would justify it in my mind that he was just really sick. But in any case, I couldn't, in the outside world, still talk about how depressed he was.
So you were trying to just keep the family together and intact.
Yeah. That,
so you were dancing as fast as you could.
And on the outside, I'm trying to be smiley, and, you know, I'd be out trying to sell ads and going to different theater productions, and life is wonderful. And they said, well, where's your husband tonight? I go, oh, he's just not feeling well. And there was a particular weekend evening that I was asked to speak at an arts ball of sorts, and to be like the guest speaker. And he was just so sick, obviously could not come. And, you know, basically he was saying, I won't be here in the morning. I mean, he really felt that he was just going to die.
Wow. Oh.
And so on the one hand, I'm thinking he's just really, really, really depressed. And then on the other hand, you're thinking, dear God, you know, it's like, okay, is he going to be here tomorrow? And, gee, I have to go out and talk at this ball. You know, so got all dressed up, you've got the jewels on, you got the hair finished, and, you know, it's an act is really what it is.
Marilyn,
you're on the outside.
Marilyn, we were talking about this when I was asking her to come speak with us, and I was saying it's something to be aware of when someone, because Marilyn was making the point that she actually had to read her speech, and
right.
Just to make that point that when you see someone and you go, oh my gosh, can you see that, can you believe she read her speech, or judge somebody that you have no idea
what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, you have no idea what's going on at home.
But I really think, you know, I could go on with some of the story, but the security clearance ran our life, you know, and I know it has to be done, but there are pilots out there, I know them, that, and I've even listened to some radio stations, they talked about this one pilot came out and talked about the fact that he was suffering depression. He got assistance and went, you know, and got medical assistance, lost his job because of it, and now he's like a spokesperson for getting the help, because a lot of times it is a chemical imbalance. It's like having diabetes, or it's like having any other disease. There are medications you can take, and it doesn't affect your capability in your job. We are set up as a society to look at depression. We don't take care of the people that are depressed. You know, we really don't. And in order for him to get the help that he needed, and I knew he needed help, but there was nowhere to turn.
Right.
Marilyn, this is Sharon. Let me ask you this. How long did you have to go on before Roland was able to get help he needed? I mean, how long did this take on? Because, I mean, there's a lot of women out there whose husbands, you know, may be suffering from depression, and they really just don't know the steps to take, or, you know.
The scary part is I can't even tell you the steps to take, because it almost takes an act of God or something horrible happening before there's help. Roland was getting lower and lower and lower and lower. And one time I said, you know, and he was ill, very ill. I mean, sick as a dog a lot. Couldn't eat. I was worried about the fact that he couldn't eat. Therefore, if he took his insulin and then couldn't eat, then he would drop in sugar, possibly go comatose. I mean, my son and I would be trying to stand him up against the stove in the kitchen and push M&Ms in his mouth to just eat them to get the, you know. But not knowing also that he was drinking so much, and we didn't know. I mean, have a glass of wine in the night. You know, he would have a glass of vodka, I mean, as a mixed drink. Well, and sometimes I'd see him pour a little more, you know, but it was never to the point where I thought there was an issue. I tried to take him to the doctor. He finally agreed to allow me to take him actually to the hospital, to our Fayette Community Hospital. We get in there, finally, we're in the waiting room, emergency. I take him in, they're asking him tons of questions, and I think they were just getting too close to asking the ones he was afraid to talk about. So the nurse says, excuse me, I'll be back in a minute. He hightails it out, and basically, we never finished that doctor's appointment. Because he was afraid that they were going to find out something, and they were going to admit him to the hospital and find out whatever. You know, whether he was drinking too much, or we had also gone to the regular doctor, and Roland was complaining that he wasn't able to sleep. What do? They give him Ambien. Well, now we know that people walk on Ambien. They couldn't keep, Ambien could not keep Roland down. So he'd be walking the halls at night, and I'd be up. It's like having a child again, where you have one eye open, and I mean, this went on, and you asked me how long this lasted. Probably the heaviest of it lasted over, about a year and a half, probably.
Wow. Was the clincher when he fell down the stairs, Marilyn?
Well, yes, definitely. But what had happened was, you know, there were a lot of back and forth, you know, as far as thinking, well, there's nothing we can do, you know. I mean, Roland was just sick, sick, sick. I didn't know what to do about it. I mean, I did not know what to do about it. My son and I were at the store, and we get back, and I hear a different voice in our house. I'm like, oh, my gosh, who is that? oh, it's our across the street neighbor. I'm thinking, what in the world is he doing here? And I knew Roland was like totally out of it. And I'm thinking, what is he telling this man, you know? And come to find out, Roland had, thank goodness, called our neighbor and said he needed help. Well, that was the first time he said to anybody outside of our home, because I had been trying to protect anybody from finding out anything, because mm-hmm. that's what I was asked to do by Roland. And this just has to do with the depression and the alcoholism. The only place that's close for someone around here is about 40 minutes away in Riverdale. We had, and I know Roland describes this in the book, but my son and I are in the car, and we are taking Roland to the psych hospital, basically. And he scared us to death because he kept trying to get out of the car. So I'm driving with one hand. On the other hand, I'm just using my finger up and down on that lock. I'm like, don't you leave, don't you leave this car, don't you leave this car, don't you leave this car. I mean, it was like a nightmare. We finally get in there, and basically the nurse said to me, do you feel like he's in danger of, you know, either hurting someone else or hurting himself? And I said, yes. And I said, that's all we need to know. And
good
then they
you.
Took it over. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was like, thank you, because
right.
there I didn't know what else to do. The bad part of that story is they only can keep him for 4 days, and, you know, and they have to run it by insurance, and, you know, insurance plays a part in this too, you know. And they keep him for 4 days. They give him, like, four different medications to include Ambien, Xanax, Wellbutrin. Well, he comes home. He takes all of it. I don't know how often he takes all of it. There's no way. I started counting the pills, and they're more gone than should be. And plus with, I guess, the drinking, which I didn't know he was, you know, he'd walk out and go walk to a bottle shop and bring something home. I didn't even know it.
So you're taking him to the psych hospital, but you know at this point he is suffering from alcoholism, or are you just thinking it's just depression still?
I'm thinking it's depression. I know
with the diabetes.
He had been drinking also at that point, but I just thought it was just that point in time. I didn't realize how long this has been going on with the alcohol. So he gets home, he takes all that, and he's still miserable. I call his family, and I'm like, you need to come here. I don't know what else to do. You need to come. His brother flies from Indiana. It was that very night. Roland doesn't remember picking up his brother at the airport, but it was early in the morning, like 3 o'clock. We were all talking. We go to bed late. Roland gets up, sure enough, and he passes out on the steps and falls all the way down. It was a huge boom, and there you go. They take him to ICU, and he remained in ICU for an entire 30 days.
Goodness. Oh, my gosh.
And almost died. He was intubated. He got pneumonia. He had an operation on his lung. Basically, it was the psych doctor that called me, because they had all different doctors looking at him. And of course, you know, I gather all his medication and insulin and everything else, because they want to know what they take. She said, well, how much has he been drinking? I said, what are you talking about? Because, well, we've seen this before, you know, obviously.
It's going through withdrawals.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, I was so upset, because I felt that this was something he had control over. You know, I know the depression because of the security clearance, he couldn't tell someone. I know about that. But I thought with the alcoholism, I felt that that was something he had control over. And that's what made me upset, because I trusted him. I trusted that, you know, is it a romantic thing? We'd be together forever and everything was going to be wonderful forever. It was turning out not to be that way. But that was the first time that I realized that I had absolutely no control over anything at all. And that was a really big lesson.
That's a big lesson a lot of us.
Yeah.
Because humans always feel, and I mean, I'm definitely a control freak, but there is nothing I can do to change, make different. You know, I can't wish things away. I just had to wait it out. But it was right before he fell down the steps. He was crying. He says, that's when he told me he worked for the CIA.
Did you think he was psychotic?
Yeah.
I ask that sincerely. I mean,
honestly, when he told me he worked for the CIA, I knew that there was something else in him that he just couldn't say, or there was just a part of him that was so hurting. And he said he had never said that to anyone in 30 years. And I wasn't surprised.
Wow.
I mean, that's the question that people, didn't you know? How come you didn't know? Or, you know, were you upset? Absolutely not. I wasn't upset because that was his job. He was a soldier for our country, and that's the way I looked at it. And that he didn't have control over.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, but what he did have control over was what I was upset about. And thank goodness they wouldn't let him come home. They said, no, you're going into rehab after this. But while he was in rehab, I was scheduled to have a hysterectomy. So he wasn't with me, and my son was basically taking care of me, and my daughter came for a few days, but I was really upset about that, because
sure.
That's a hard enough time in your life, you know,
sure.
But you really, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, my kids will be alone. I mean, here their father's in rehab, and I'm in a hospital. What happens if something happens?
Right.
You know, and I just had to have...
Well, at that point, Marilyn, were you telling people that he was in rehab?
I was telling people he was in rehabilitation. That was because of the 6 ribs he broke when he fell down the steps.
Oh, I get
bones
it.
In his face.
And his wrist. I know his wrist.
And his wrist. And he had lost so much weight. He, you know, he looked like he had cancer. I mean, he was really, really, really thin. So, no. Because, once again, I was an enabler.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to say anything that could possibly
jeopardize sure.
our life.
Marilyn, this is Sharon. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Roland touches on this both in his book and yesterday in our interview with him.
Mm-hmm.
The communication, he said that was a very difficult thing for him, and he felt like the book helped open up, if you will, a part of him that he had not been able to. So when being married to him, you know, tell us a little bit about, you know, what it's like to be married to someone who really does have difficulty with communicating.
Well, like when he told me that he, you know, worked for the CIA, it helped me to understand why he's been so quiet. Now that he's written the book and now that I know everything, or at least what everybody else knows, what I read in the book like everybody else has, there is forgiveness and understanding. For our married life, of course, there's, you know, small talk communication. That's there.
Is it better now after the book?
It's definitely better.
Okay.
It can get better. Still, and he knows it. I mean, he'll agree with me on that.
What man can't it get
yeah,
better?
Yeah. Right.
But, you know, this is something that has been so ingrained and so part of him. I mean, when he would call me when we were dating, he would call me, and I'd have to do the conversation. I think women like the mysterious a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That's a good point.
I didn't know everything, and maybe just the fact that he had the job that he had. A lot of women may think that, you know, gosh, she was naive. I can't believe how naive she was. I had no reason to question him.
Well, how do you deal with the trust issues now?
I feel like during the really, really rough time, I paid my dues,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want to pay them again.
Mm.
And I think he doesn't want to pay them again. I think there's a mutual understanding that maybe we can get back to where we wanted to be in the first place. And I think we are. I mean, I think we're happier. I'm happier knowing he can go and give someone a hug, or he can go and, you know, be friends with people or be whoever he is, and this is sort of like a new life for him.
It really
so
is.
It must be like a new
it
life
really
for
is.
Both of you.
Yeah, it is. It's
I mean, because
very much.
He's not the guy you married.
Pardon me?
He's not the guy you married now.
Well, he's the guy that I felt like I saw inside. You know, those beginning times or those alone times, I have to say that he loved me unconditionally like no one had. And, you know, for any of my past or any of the things that I, whoever I was, he accepted me for everything that I was, and wholly and completely. So, you know, there was a really strong connection there. When you look at the big picture of everything, I have choices, and my choices are to be angry and feel betrayed and consequently leave the marriage, or understand that he had to keep those things away from me. You know, working for the CIA, he had to.
Right.
He had no other choice.
Marilyn,
this is what he did for our country.
Marilyn, you mentioned earlier about you being an enabler.
Mm-hmm.
Do you or have you attended meetings
yes.
or gone through any kind of therapy or anything like that?
Well, this is just talking to you as part of my therapy.
Excellent!
So. But, Yeah, I did. I actually went to some meetings. It's a good thing to do. It definitely is a good thing to do because you feel, even though your circumstance may be a little bit different, you find that you have a lot in common. Now, I never brought up to anyone, even at that point, that he worked for the CIA, you know, because that was his story to tell, right. Not mine.
Yeah. Just to clarify, though, was those meetings, was that with Al-Anon?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. It was. They have Al-Anon for kids, too, because, you know, and this is also another thing. I grew up with an alcoholic father. And when we were really in the depths of the nastiness in our family, I thought, oh, I'm sort of living the life that my mother led.
Wow.
You know, because she would go to work, everything would be happy, smiley, smiley. You get home, and if your husband happens to be drinking, you think, oh, I mean, he wasn't abusive, but I used to be afraid to bring people over to my house.
Sure.
You know, or kids to my house to spend the night or whatever, because I never knew if my father would be drunk or not. And so the sort of the same thing would be happening. It's like, oh, please don't anybody come to my house, because I never knew what kind of situation, and just like in the book, my son didn't know. He would come home and say, you know, how's Dad doing today? And it was just really, really awful. But I was an enabler, but I didn't know anything else to do about it.
Yeah. You do what you know, kind of, I think.
You did the best with what you knew
exactly.
At that time.
Absolutely. And I wish there was some sort of agency, or, you know, where they come in and the spouse would say, well, you know, my husband really needs, or my wife really needs, you know, help. Can you assist them? And getting help. You know, there is nobody. They have to want to do it themselves. And in Roland's case, that choice was sort of taken from him. I mean, falling down the steps and ending up in the hospital and then having to go to rehab. And I'm glad he went, because believe me, I did not want him home. I wanted him fixed, basically. I wanted him fixed before he came home. And truthfully, I think what he found with where he was accepted. I mean, the people that run those facilities have been there, done that. And that's what makes it so special, because they're
They're
able
good.
To help him in ways that no other people could help him.
Marilyn, it sounds like there's been a lot of wounds, but a lot of healing going on at the same time.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's a really good thing. Do you still find that you are benefiting from Al-Anon or outside sources to kind of help out with everything? Or can you just, you can't just do it alone, can you?
You know what? There are those friends, those girlfriends that, you know, step into play. And they were extremely helpful, although I couldn't tell them everything.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few people that I spoke to when he was in the hospital, that would come and bring us food and take our son to a voice lesson or to theater practice or whatever.
Have your friendships changed at all, Marilyn? This is Suzanne. Have your friendships...
No, I think they've actually probably gotten better, because there are no more secrets. You have pretty much put out to everybody that this is the way it was, and there are no secrets.
This is Carrie, and it just reminds me why we got the group, the Divas, together in the first place.
Absolutely.
Because that's exactly, you know, the whole point of it was that we're tired of the friendships where everybody was just so surfacey and trying to impress each other. And you do find, I mean, I think you're probably agree that when you lay stuff out there like that, then it opens the door for others to put their stuff out there, and you can be supportive to them too. I mean, they might have a whole different, you know, issue, but it's just something I would never trade to have this type of friendship.
Oh, I agree with you. I mean, it's been very healing for all of us. We are so proud of Roland for coming through this, because he had a choice not to get through it.
That's right.
Yeah,
wow.
He did.
And really, Marilyn, this is Sharon. In retrospect, when you look back, I mean, all of these things happened for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really, him falling down the stairs like
that,
you taking him to a place where they knew what to look for and those kind of things. I mean, it's just, I mean, you are now, I'm hoping, at a really good place and just.
You know, I think we are. I don't know what the next day is going to bring, but somehow I feel like it's going to work out. With Roland, he's a very strong personality, and he would have had to have been for all the things that he has done in his lifetime. And, you know, if anybody's going to make it through the alcoholism, it will be him. So,
and you will help him along that route.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was interesting for him to say that he doesn't have the urge to drink. I mean, I always assumed, I guess, incorrectly, that once you're, you know, you suffer with alcoholism, that it's just a constant temptation.
Well, that's what he says sometimes. Like, he is not allowed to divulge names about his group or the AA group that he's in. But,
right.
You know, there'll be some people that is the way it is for them.
Marilyn, let me just say this. I know Roland told us on the interview we did with him, that if one good thing came out of his book, it would be that his son has already determined he will not drink.
He's very clear on that.
So, I mean, I just think that's a great...
Yeah, it's awesome.
You know, if nothing else comes out of it. But Marilyn, thank you so much for your time, and we appreciate it. And we hope that we have at least, you know, reached out to some of our listeners out there who are in maybe perhaps similar situations. Is there any last words or wisdom that you'd like to share with us as far as our listeners?
Well, I thank you so much for having me. You know, I just want to say that all in all, I'm very, very proud of my husband and the work he's done for our country.
And Marilyn, don't sell yourself short, babe. You've been through a lot as well, and you are one tough cookie here, so you need to be proud of yourself and your commitment to your marriage and your husband and your family.
Yeah, quite inspiring.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Our hats off to you.
Well, Marilyn, this has really been a fascinating time with you. And we will have Roland's book, a link to his book, on our website, thedivacast.com. And just for our listeners, we've been talking with Marilyn Haas today. The book again is Enter the Past Tense, My Secret Life as a CIA Assassin by Roland Haas. It has just been released in July. Go get it. And there will be a link on our website. Fascinating. You won't be able to put it down. So thank you, Marilyn.
Thanks so much.
Marilyn, we're making you honorary diva.
Awesome. I'd love to be one.
You are one.
Thank you. Thanks, Marilyn.
Bye-bye. Take care for now.
Bye-bye.
Hey, you guys, go to our website, thedivacast.com. There's a spot there to subscribe to our newsletter. And when you do that, you're going to enter your name into all of our contests. And this most recent one will be to win a copy of Roland's book. Go to thedivacast.com.
Well, that was an interesting conversation. I mean, it's just a lot. Lot of stuff. I mean, could you imagine? I wonder what my husband's doing with his real time.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
That's what I think was so intriguing about the book. I mean, I know Marilyn from doing some work with her, and I knew at one point there was some issues going on at home, but I had no idea. I mean, obviously had no idea, but I didn't even know about the alcoholism or anything. We're not, you know, real close or anything, but when that came out, I was just shocked. And she did say, I don't think she said this in the interview, that she did not know all the details of what he had done until she read the book like everybody else.
Wow.
So that was wild.
That's just amazing. And she showed some real strength. Yeah.
Yeah.
The girl's got some grit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have a couple emails. Natalie from Lawrenceville, Georgia, right here, emailed us, and it was a really good email. And basically, she just says, I'm her favorite.
She did not. I saw that email, Sharon.
No, she just is telling us how much she enjoys our podcast, and we appreciate that. And we just thank you for listening, Natalie. And Eileen emailed us, and she's been chatting with me on our Weight Watchers blog. She's doing Weight Watchers. So
cool. Where's the margarita recipe? Could you please put out the margarita recipe?
I will put the margarita recipe. I've been drinking my sangria.
Let me ask you this, Sharon, about that blog right now. Right now, you can only write on the blog, correct?
I don't know.
Well, I think it's only you, but I was thinking if we open up a forum where other people can get on there and talk about that. I'll do that. I'll put that on the forum so they can talk about Weight Watchers.
Right. Okay, good. And also, Susan P., she sent us an email. Can I ask you a dumb question? How do I listen to your show live versus Memorex?
Aww.
And that's not a dumb question. I mean, the reality is, Susan, is that we, they're all Memorex. And that's so we can, well, that's just how podcast works, quite honestly.
We're closing with some Podsafe music from Ocean Street. This song is entitled Hold On. Take a listen, guys. And as always, thanks to Natalie Brown for the Queen of Me. Have a great day. We'll talk to you next time.
Take care.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
is shining through the haze. Oh, maybe you see me on the other side dreaming, and I will carry you away.
Carry.
And if you hold on to me, I'll make you believe in everything we can't describe. Everything we can't describe. When you fall, I will leave. If it's dark, we will see. There's a long road to the middle, and I know we'll pass by.
The best and the brightest served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show and Limelight.